This morning we're continuing our series called Anthems, and it's been pretty fun watching the band play these songs. And if you haven't noticed, they're posting them on our Facebook page. So Wayne, he's been awesome volunteering, and he's the man. He's got all of his equipment. It's none of ours because we don't have stuff that's nice. And no, I'm just kidding. We have nice stuff. We don't have cameras like that. So he's been filming. And so if you haven't seen them, they're on our Facebook. You check them out there, the songs that we've been playing. But today we're singing Castle on a Hill by Ed Sheeran. And the reason we're doing these is not so we can be cool, because trust me, we're not cool. If you talk to me when I'm not on the stage, I'm really awkward. And so is most of the staff. And we're doing it because we realize that, and a lot of songs that people, like artists write, popular artists write, they're writing messages that are actually biblical, whether they know it or not. There's moments in their songs where they're saying things that are in the Bible. You know, it's kind of like someone says karma. It's like, well, that's you reap what you sow. Like, that's in the Bible. And people think, oh, no, I made that up. Oh, okay. And so that's what we're trying to do. We're taking these songs and comparing them to the Psalms in the Bible. And this morning, Andrew, our youth pastor, he's going to be speaking on this song. It's going to be good. Last time he spoke, I bawled my eyes out. And I was kidding. I didn't. But it was good. He's a really good speaker. So he's going to be up in just a moment. The band's going to sing the song. Again, we're doing this because we want to connect with the people in our community. And it's a good tool for you guys to be able to invite your friends to. So you're like, hey, they're going to be singing Castle on the Hill by Ed Sheeran. You should come with me. Like, oh, what? Your church is singing that? Yeah. And that gets them in the doors. And now we get an opportunity to share Jesus with them in another way. And they get to see a bunch of people that follow Jesus and that love people. So just a little tidbit for you. They're going to sing, and you guys just sit there and watch them.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to Restoration Church once again. Like Chris said, my name is Andrew, and I'm the youth pastor here, and I'm really excited to be preaching on this message today. All this week, all I've done is listen to Castle on the Hill on repeat, like constantly, because I was trying to completely figure out and understand what the message behind this song was. And as I listened to it more and more, man, every time I had a different revelation of the truth that Ed Sheeran was professing. And it's really cool because in Jewish culture, they had this idea and this thought, and this really gets at what the heart of our anthem series is to me, is in Jewish culture, they really believe that any truth, no matter the source, was of God. And so as I listened to this song, I began to find these truths more and more and realize that I was seeing God in these lyrics in a powerful and real way. And so today, my goal is to take you on this journey that I had of understanding what this song is saying and how we can understand it. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is Ed Sheeran wrote this song with a very particular castle in mind. In Farmingham, England, he had the castle, and we have a picture of it. This was the actual castle which he was referring to the sun setting behind. And so someone, when I showed them this, they're like, wow, it's so pretty. And that's what I realized. Ed Sheeran is evoking this idea of this gorgeous, gorgeous castle that he remembers seeing the sunset from his childhood. But if you read the lyrics of the song, you kind of wonder why he's feeling so nostalgic about his childhood. See, in the first lyrics, as we go into them, he writes, "When I was 6 years old, I broke my leg. I was running from my brother and his friends." And at first you think, oh, that's sweet. You know, they're playing a game, they're playing chase. But then you start to think, and if you're anything like me, I'm the oldest sibling of my family. And so when it says, I was running from my brother and his friends, that's not a good thing that was occurring here. There was something bad happening as he ran. And he breaks his leg. And then it says, and I tasted the sweet perfume of the mountain grass I rolled down. I was younger then. Take me back to when I found my heart and broke it here, made friends and lost them through the years, and I've not seen the roaring fields in so long. I've grown, but I can't wait to go home. And so as I read this and started thinking, I'm like, why does he want to go back to this place? As he talked about, so first of all, he was getting tortured by his brother, broke his leg, had his heart broken, and lost all of his friends. These are the four things that he talks about happening to him. But on the other hand, he also addresses this idea of, I tasted the sweet perfume of the mountain grass as I rolled down. So even as he broke his leg, was in misery, was being tortured, he found something beautiful. He found a moment that was gorgeous. He smelled the sweet perfume. Or he says, I found my heart and it was broken. See, many people would be upset that their heart was broken, but he realizes it's the fact that I found it at all that's important. He said, I made friends and I lost them. And the same sentiment applies. See, notice when we read this, it's filled with apparently conflicting thoughts, things that contradict themselves. And so as I began to struggle, I'm like, what are some things in my life that I shouldn't seem to enjoy, but I do? And I came up with a few answers. And so for one thing that I love and I am obsessed with is I love eating the most sour things possible. Like, if I love sour candies, and me and my wife, we found this one candy in particular that is called Toxic Waste, which gives you any idea, and it's literally painful to eat it, but I love eating Toxic Waste. Another example I have that was just from, I think I moved out here, like, it was like a month into moving out here. One of my friends, Tom, invited me to go eat spicy wings at Wingets. We did the spicy wing challenge at Wingets in Portsmouth. And if any of you know me, I don't eat spicy stuff because I die. I think you had to eat like 12 wings. Tom ate all 12 in 2 minutes. I ate two and then quit. But I hate spicy things, but man, I loved the experience of being there with a new friend to enjoy pain together. So he started getting at this idea of the importance of not only our happy memories, but our painful ones at the same time. And as he continues, if we read on the lyrics, he says, "And I'm on my way. I still remember this old country lanes. When we did not know the answers, and I miss the way you make me feel. It's real. We watched the sunset over the castle on the hill." See, I began to realize as I started thinking about this idea of a sunset and what a sunset means. And as I thought about it, and as I began to process it, I finally came to this realization that the sunset is a moment in time where both light and dark exist. Both the good and the bad are present. Here comes the night, but the day has not left us yet. See, and so when Ed Sheeran says, "I broke my leg, but because of that, I experienced the perfume of the mountain grass. I found my heart, and it was broken. I lost friends, but I had them." And so with this mentality, we're going to jump into the scripture that begins to formulate our thoughts on this. And so that is Psalm 27. And for many of you, if you don't go to church or you don't hang out, I'm going to tell you a little bit of the backstory of this psalm. As the king of Israel, he wasn't king at the time, David, who slew Goliath, was writing this. He was supposed to be king. He was supposed to have taken over all of Israel and be running the kingdom. But the previous king, King Saul, had chased him into exile. So David, who was supposed to be king, was living in caves. He was hiding out. He was constantly fearful that his life was going to be taken from him. And so David is living in the midst of this horrible fear, this horrible anxiety that at any moment he could die, that all the promises God had made for him were not going to be fulfilled. And so that's what he's writing. And the first lines of this psalm is, "The Lord is my light and my salvation, so why should I be afraid? The Lord is my fortress, protecting me from danger. So why should I tremble? When evil people come to devour me, when my enemies and foes attack me, they will surely stumble and fall. Though a mighty army surrounds me, my heart will not be afraid. Even if I am attacked, I will remain confident." So, as I thought about this and I realized that David is in the midst of this horrendous transition, this horrendous time in his life where everything seems to be chaos, and similarly, Ed Sheeran is writing these memories where everything was in chaos for a moment as his leg was broken and he's rolling down the hill, I came to this thought and this idea, and if you take anything away from my sermon today, I want you to remember this. If we are in the midst of upheaval, we are in the moment of opportunity. If we're in the midst of upheaval, we're in the moment of opportunity. See, David began to understand that in this moment, in this pain, as he was experiencing it, he had two choices. He could lie down and cry out, "Woe is me, everything is terrible." Or he could embrace the happiness of that moment, the opportunity. And so Ed Sheeran had that same experience when he says, I broke my leg, but I chose to embrace the happiness. My childhood was not easy. There were many times when things were going wrong, but I chose to embrace the joyful moments and remember them fondly. So as I thought about this and I thought about the pain that we're all constantly going through in some form in your life, whether, you know, I don't know what it may look like for you, but all of us know that there's something in their life that isn't quite right. We have an opportunity to do something with that. And to stick with our English theme of the day, I decided to quote a preacher named Charles Spurgeon. And he says, "I am certain that I never did grow in grace one half so much anywhere as I have upon the bed of pain." And so as Ed Sheeran goes on in his song, he begins to sing, "One friend left to sell clothes, one works down by the coast, one's brother overdosed, one's already on his second wife, one's just barely getting by, but these people raised me. And I can't wait to go home." The idea here is that despite the pain they're going through, despite all of those things, they still have happiness and joy together. Man, some of these quotes may hit you close to home as he talks about broken families, losing loved ones. Man, we all experience this same level of pain, this same experience, but we have an opportunity to make something greater out of it. It says in the psalm as we go on, "Hear me as I pray, O Lord, be merciful and answer me. My heart has heard you say, come talk with me. And my heart responds, Lord, I am coming. Do not turn your back on me. Do not reject your servant in anger. You've always been my helper. Do not leave me now. Don't abandon me, O God of my salvation. Even if my mother and father abandon me, the Lord will hold me close." And so as I thought about this, and as I began to process it, one of the things I noticed is Ed Sheeran talks about all of these terrible things that his friends are going through, all of these terrible experiences that they're having. And something hit me. I was like, you know what? Ed Sheeran is really famous. He's doing really, really well. He could have left those friends. He could have abandoned them. He could just say, you know what, I don't want anything to do with you guys. Man, your lives are in shambles. Everything is screwed up. Man, you are just in so much pain. But he chose instead to say, I just want to be back with them, though. Despite all they've gone through, despite all their pain, I'm not going to abandon them, even as they fall apart. And so this made me think of this idea of it's how you act when things are going right that are going to define how you act when they start going wrong. The way you're acting and you conduct yourself when everything is fine, man, that's how you're going to react when things start to fall apart. And the best example I could think of this, and many of you may have had this experience, is when your house is totally trashed, and then someone shows up out of nowhere unexpectedly. So, like, I remember, you know, one time my wife and I were at our house, and someone knocked on the door, and they came to, like, hang out with us. And meanwhile, like, our laundry was everywhere, and our kitchen was a nightmare. Man, and then you always, when this happens, you always make a promise to yourself. You're like, man, I'm just going to keep my house clean all the time. And it lasts for about a day before you give up on that idea. But man, it's not how you are acting when things are a nightmare. It's how you're acting when things are going right. So if the whole idea is this thought and this processing of it's beautiful to be in pain in some way, there's always an opportunity there. What does that look like in real life? So if I could take a moment and invite you into my life, into probably what was simultaneously the best and worst weekend I've ever had. So I think it was about, it's 2 years ago now. I was young, I was still in college, not that I'm not young now, but I was still in college. I was dating a girl who's now my wife, so this story has a happy ending, don't worry. But we were dating, and we were starting to get more serious. And so for me, I was starting to think, like, hey, I could see myself spending the rest of my life with this girl. And she was not there yet. But I was, and so I would talk about it, and it'd freak her out. And so one weekend, I went to her house, and we were hanging out and stuff, and it was just like, it just wasn't, something was off. Like, we could feel it. Like, something, we were not connecting properly. Like, we were having some sort of issues. And you know, she would, like, disappear for, like, 15, 20 minutes. I'd be like, where you go? And she's like, oh, I just went downstairs for a minute. Meanwhile, she's downstairs crying because she's thinking about breaking up with me. And so it's like, you know those feelings where you can feel that things aren't quite right. And so we're dealing with this. And so we decided to go to the movies. We went, and I think we saw Toy Story 3 or something. And so we went and we saw Toy Story 3. But before we went to the movies, you know, we stopped in the car and we started having this conversation where, man, things were just, like, things were coming to a head. These emotions were coming up where she's like, I don't know if we can be together anymore. And meanwhile, I'm just devastated because I'm like, I know I'm supposed to spend the rest of my life with you, and you're telling me you want to break up. And so we're devastated, and we talk through it, and it kind of starts to get better, but it's not really. It's still, something is off. And so it goes by another day, and, you know, we spent a whole day. We went down to the aquarium in Boston, and it was just, like, awkward the entire time. Like, we couldn't talk to each other. So we're, like, at this beautiful place but having a horrible experience. And so we're trying to work this out. And then finally, I think, so I got my timeline messed up. We finally go to the movies, and all these emotions are coming out. And we get out of the movies, and I look at my phone, and I've got, like, 5 missed calls from my mom and 7 text messages from her saying, like, you need to call me, you need to call me, you need to call me. And so for my mom, like, that, all my red flags are going up. Like, I have no idea what's happening or what's going on. And I call her, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm like, hey, mom, what's going on? What's happening? Why'd you call me? She's like, hey, your grandmother just had a heart attack. And for me, this was, like, the most devastating thing, because my grandmother is one of the pillars of my life. Like, I may not look it, and I have to say this every time, I don't look it, but I'm Puerto Rican. And for anyone who knows how Hispanic family works, man, there, it's a matriarchy, and it is run by your mamita. So to find out my grandmother has had a heart attack, and they're rushing her to the hospital down in Burlington, Vermont. Man, we walk out of this movie theater, and so I'm like, my girlfriend's about to break up with me. My grandmother's on the way to the hospital. I'm 3 hours away from home, and I just remember, like, I'm just standing there, and I literally, as we're walking out of the movie theater, I just, like, doubled over and just stood there, just overwhelmed by everything that was happening to me. And so I'm trying to, like, keep some level of composure in myself as everything that could possibly be going wrong is going wrong. And I'm, like, sitting there, and, you know, my girlfriend, she's concerned. She's like, what's up? What's up? And I'm like, Mamita's having a heart attack. And she's like, well, what do you want to do? I was like, I have to go home. And so I didn't have a car here with me, because my mom had dropped me off halfway, and then Laurel had picked me up and taken me to her house, so I didn't have a car. She's like, well, what do you want to do? I was like, we need to go back to my house. So it's like 1 o'clock in the morning at this point. Everything's a nightmare, and we pack up the car, and we just start driving home. And so she's driving me, and it's like, we have to have a 3-hour car ride where she wants to break up with me, but she can't because my grandmother's having a heart attack. So we get home, and we get there at, like, man, it was like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, and so I'm just exhausted and on the verge of breaking down. So we get up like an hour later and we go down to the hospital and we like visit my grandmother. Laurel stayed home and she's sleeping. No, she came with us. So she came with us and so she's still there. It's still awkward. And so then, you know, finally, you know, I wake up in the morning and, you know, we get some sleep and, you know, I still want to be with this girl, but we're like sitting on the couch and she's still like not talking to me. And I like literally look at her at one point and I'm like, do you want to break up with me? And she says, I don't know. And so I'm like devastated. And so we go out that night and I called one of my, my associate pastor at the time, like, hey, I don't know what to do. Like, I need your help. I need to talk to you. But he was gone, so he didn't answer. And so Laurel and I basically just sat in a car and cried for 2 hours, not knowing what was going to happen to our relationship. And finally, later that night at like 1 a.m., the associate pastor texted me. He's like, hey, Andrew, what's going on? I'm like, hey, I just need to talk. Me and Laurel are going through some rough stuff. Will you talk to us? Will you talk to us? And he said, yeah, sure, I'd be happy to. So the next morning, we go to church, and I told Laura, I was like, hey, we need to go talk to this guy. And she's like, no. And I'm like, no, we need to go talk to this guy. And she's like, I don't know, I'm not feeling great. And so like I basically dragged her kicking and screaming into this associate pastor's office, and we just sat down, and I'm just like, I don't know what's happening. Like, we're basically about to end. And so he talks us through, you know, what it means and helped me to hear what she was saying when she's like, I don't know, like, I'm terrified because you're speaking so seriously. I'm not thinking that far. Like, you're talking about marriage, and this is freaking me out. And so we began to talk and communicate and walk through this journey together of what it means to be. And so I said, all right, I can stop talking about marriage if that would make you more comfortable with our relationship. And she said, yeah. And so, you know, she left that day, and we left more hopeful. And a month later, she told me it'd be okay if I proposed to her. So everything worked out well. But man, the misery of that experience will never leave me. But you know what's more important is in the midst of that upheaval, we were in a moment of opportunity. See, I'm convinced, and many of you who are in a relationship that's been going on for a long while or have friends for a long time, man, every relationship hits a point where one person says, man, this is getting really serious. And there's some sort of decision that has to be made of whether or not it's going to continue forward. And so I'm so thankful to this day, in a lot of ways, that my grandmother had a heart attack. Because if she hadn't, we wouldn't have gone to a place where we could be healed, where someone could help us, where someone could move us on to that next phase in our life. And so the psalm, it concludes with, teach me how to live, O Lord. Lead me along the right path, for my enemies are waiting for me. Do not let me fall into their hands, for they accuse me of things I've never done. With every breath, they threaten me with violence. Yet I am confident I will see the Lord's goodness while I'm here in the land of the living. Wait patiently for the Lord. Be brave and courageous. Yes, wait patiently for the Lord. See, and the very last part of this psalm sticks out to me because David is almost in desperation repeating something that will comfort him. He just says, wait patiently. Yes, wait patiently. Wait patiently. He's just continually trying to express, man, I don't know what to feel. I don't know how I feel, but man, I'm holding to this one truth, this only truth that I know. And so for me, as I walked through this journey of not knowing if me and my future wife were going to make it, man, the only thing I held to was, God, please let us stay together. God, please let us hold on. I know I'm supposed to spend the rest of my life with this girl. And I'm just in desperation asking you to lead me. And meanwhile, I'm also praying, God, just hold on. Don't let my grandmother die tonight. Don't let my grandmother die. Man, let me tell you, at the time, that did not feel like the right path. It felt like everything was falling apart. The band wants to come up. But man, if there's one thing I can have confidence in, it's that God was guiding my steps through that journey. Maybe you're sitting here today because someone dragged you into this church kicking and screaming. Maybe you're sitting here today because weird coincidences or circumstances managed to get you here. Maybe you're sitting here today because all hope is gone in your life and all you can do is come to church as a last resort. Man, I think this psalm and Ed Sheeran get at the truth. Man, when you're in pain, when you're in suffering, it's an opportunity. Just like the sunset signifies both the light and the dark, man, you get to choose which one you want to enjoy. Man, you can be depressed because the day is over and it's leaving you. Or you can be excited because you had the day at all. See, nighttime should be a time of terror, of fear, where we're scared. See, but I remember distinctly some of my best memories as a kid were going into the backyard and camping out in a tent with my dad. And we used to catch fireflies in the middle of the night. We would go and we'd get this jar of fireflies and we would save them and they would be our nightlight all night long. And as I thought about this psalm and I thought about the song, man, I came to a realization. And you can't catch fireflies during the day. Man, how lucky we are that in the midst of our pain, man, we serve a God who is our light. He's our light and our salvation. Man, and you may not know what that means, but you might be curious. And I would encourage you, as the prayer team comes up after service, man, if you have any curiosity, what does it mean? What do you mean that in the midst of my pain and my suffering, there's a God who serves and loves and is light? And come find out. Come take the journey. Find out what it means to see the light in the dark. And so I'm going to leave you with one final quote. And the band is going to play and just take some time to reflect on what the painful areas of your life are and where the opportunities arise out of that. So this is a quote by a man named A.J. Gossip. He's from Scotland, and he talks about some of the suffering that he went through. But he takes it in a new direction that I think sums up this song and this psalm. He says, pain is a kindly, hopeful thing, a certain proof of life, a clear assurance that all is not yet over, that there is still a chance. But if your heart has no pain, well, that may be token health, as you suppose. But are you certain that it does not mean that your soul is dead? Man, this world around us is living living in a sunset. Both the light and the dark are present. But that pain and that suffering, it reminds us that this isn't the end. This isn't the way it's supposed to be for all time. It points us to a future and a hope that is greater than anything we can imagine, to a glory that is higher and more beautiful than we can process. So as you reflect on your life, think, where am I being pointed to? If you'll bow your heads with me, God, thank you for this day. Thank you for the pain that we experience that leads to your glorification, that leads to who you are, and leads to everything you have in store for us. And when it feels like the world threatens to overcome, let us find the opportunity in the midst of upheaval. In your name we pray.